At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and the only place to hear the joke of the week from Duff McKagan.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan here. Real quick, you know, we're talking about science and stuff a lot lately. Do you know the difference between an enzyme and a hormone? Yeah, you can't hear an enzyme. Thank you very much. Bye.
We had a lot of good ones in a row. I finally got the minute one from last week. But then Duff breaks his streak with that one. Well, thanks to Duff anyways for never missing a Friday with the joke of the week. He'll definitely be bringing it when Guns N' Roses hit the road later this summer. Hopefully he'll be able to keep calling in the jokes. They just announced their rescheduled dates and they added 14 new ones, stadiums and arenas. They start back up July 31st in Pennsylvania, full capacity crowds. It's going to be a great time. Go to GunsNRoses.com for all ticket info. And go ahead and buy your tickets to see Fozzy, too. The Save the World Tour launches September 2nd in Columbus. We've got a few festival appearances happening before then as well this summer. You get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come out and rock with Fozzy. Check out the VIP, too. Most of those are sold out, but we still have a few left in certain cities. So check all that out at FozzyRock.com. And just remember, we are going to be in Iowa City at Wildwood on July 14th. We're going to be at the Cadott Rock Fest main stage on July 15th. In Jacksonville, the Taco Festival on July 17th. Then we've got Sheboygan at Brat Days August 7th. And then the Save the World Tour continues and really starts in earnest. September 2nd in Columbus. September 3rd, Joliet at the Forge. September 4th, Belvedere at the Apollo Theater. September 6th in Kansasville, Wisconsin. Going all the way to October 9th in Orlando at the Earth Day Birthday. So go check it out at FozzyRock.com for all tickets and VIP for whatever we have left. All right. It's going to be a great, great time. Through Fire, Royal Bliss, Black Satellite, Zero Theorem will be out with us for most of the dates. So come check it out, FozzyRock.com. Fozzy is back, baby. Come hang with us. And don't forget the new video for Sane. It's on my YouTube channel. We filmed it on a roller coaster in Holiday World in Santa Claus, Indiana. No stunt doubles or CGI special effects for that, similar to the rappelling that we did with the Inner Circle, which we're going to talk about just in a bit. And don't forget about the latest episode of Winnipeggers on my YouTube channel as well, on my Facebook page too. All about high school teachers this week, complete with embarrassing yearbook photos and great stories about getting the ruler across the knuckles. That was still a thing in the 80s, so there you go. But like I said before, the Inner Circle is back here on Talk is Jericho, talking about the amazing, classic, groundbreaking stadium stampede at Double Nothing a few weeks ago. We're giving you a behind-the-scenes look at what it took to put it together this year, what the differences were between this year and last year. You hear all about Conan's surprise DJ appearance, the song that we were supposed to get, the drama around licensing music for that scene with Santana, Ortiz, and FDR. You hear all about Jake Hager and Wardlow's fight in the freezer, where that came from. And, of course, Sammy Guevara's talking about his crazy 630 he did in the ring, his Jackie Chan fight scene. And we're all discussing, like I said, the big rappel down the scoreboard. No stunt doubles there either. 100% the five of us. It was scarier than it looked. You'll hear all the gory details of the steep ladder climb to get up there, sitting on top of the scoreboard in the howling wind, waiting for the camera crew for about 20 minutes. And of course, the initial jump off the top and the rappelling down. So much to talk about. Urban Meyer, MJF. It was a classic moment. And it's going to be a classic show right here. The Inner Circle returns to break down the Stadium Stampede 2 now on Talk is Jericho.
Well, we're talking kind of the last time we did this was last summer after Stadium Stampede 1 with the Inner Circle, talking about how crazy of a match that was. And we kind of want to continue to talk about Stadium Stampede 2, which just happened. And we found out it was the second highest buy rate in AEW history, which shows that the Stadium Stampede is a legit draw. And I think that's 100% because of us.
I mean, we're the kings of the match, right? I think it's officially become an Inner Circle match.
It really has, right? Because the thing that everyone was talking about is last year's, I think, was such a surprise as far as no one really knew what it was going to be. And then how do we kind of change it around this year? So, like, asking you guys, what do you think the biggest differences were between Stampede 1 and Stampede 2? You can start, Richie.
I think for me personally, right away, was just the feel of it and the vibe that we gave off. Last year, you know, it had a lot of ha-ha, a lot of you know, pretty comedic spots that were amazing and great. And I think we did our job in providing an escape for a lot of people during that time, like the height of the pandemic. You know, everything was just starting. And I think, you know, we did our jobs with giving a little bit of everything in that one. And then with this one, it was just pure violence. It was I felt like it was exactly what it needed to be with what we were building, and especially coming off of Blood and Guts and just all that. It just had a totally different feel.
Like, the story was different this time because of it too, right? Like, more of a blood feud that started with the Blood and Guts, and we can talk about that a little bit earlier as well. But we wanted to make it more of kind of a, like a fight, like a big long movie fight scene. It's kind of what we were going for.
Yeah, the hardest thing to do with a intense storyline, intense feud, is the finish really has to equal that intensity. You got to pay it off in such a way. And to me, that finish in the ring live in front of everybody was, you know, just really paid off all the violence, all the pain, all the souls that we had to take for that match. That finish in the ring was just something else.
That was your idea for that, Sammy.
Yeah, when Tony and you told me that, I figured one of you guys came up with it too, or maybe you guys were already thinking of it. But yeah, it's crazy, you guys. You know, you guys went with it too.
What made you think of it? Because it's a great idea. It's one of those ones like I should have thought about it. But
well,
I
it's just because like, you know, there's gonna be 5,000 people there, and it's like, damn, we're gonna do a pre-recorded thing, and they're gonna watch on a monitor. It would be nice to be out there in front of the people. If only there's a way. Oh, wait, we can do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think it all worked out. Especially when you came out, Chris. Like, no one thought we were going to go out, and then you're fighting in the stands up there. People lost their minds.
It was a cool moment because we had done, like, the whole fight, you know, 28-minute kind of recorded thing. And the best part was Spears runs being chased by the motorcycle club. And then it's like we're back at that little area, and it's 3, 2, 1... go through the door, and people are still watching it back. People are still thinking, okay, this is the next scene. And then suddenly they realize, like, oh wow, like, oh my gosh. And then they start to see this ripple effect of like, they're in the arena, they're in the arena. Yeah. And then seeing you guys come around the corner, and it was just a really great idea.
Yeah. Ortiz was the one who also came up with the idea of all of us coming in through the crowd as if we were coming from the stadium. And I think that was awesome too. Like, we, you know, the fans weren't expecting us to be in, even be in the building, and you know, we give them this huge surprise and all of us coming through the audience and stuff. It was awesome.
Where'd you get that idea from, Angel?
Selfishly, I just wanted the the validation from the fans. I just wanted to walk through the sea of to feel that energy, man. It's just that the energy that night was unreal, and it was definitely a testament to us coming back. It was the best way for it to happen. And I just was like, man, we need to walk through the crowd. Like, why wouldn't we? You know what I mean? We just had this insane brawl throughout the whole entire stadium. Why wouldn't we walk through the crowd? And I just wanted to be amongst the fans.
And it's one of those things. It was perfect. There's no other way we should have done that. Mm-hmm. We could have done that, you know? Yeah. And we were talking earlier, and someone made an analogy about this. in that that match was almost like mimicking what we had been through the past year.
Yep.
We started out in, you know, with no our match at with the rappelling and all that stuff. There's no crowd. We're doing this great cinematic thing. People are watching, and then slowly we emerge into the arena. And then the end, it's like the five of us in the ring, but everybody's singing. Everybody's having just the best time. And it was really like, here's the perfect example of where we're at right now.
I think it was the perfect validation for all the hard work that we put in the entire year, you know, just right. leading up to that and finally having that moment in front of a returning crowd. And just it's definitely something that'll be with me forever personally. Like, it's all five of us being in the ring and just feeling that energy and having the crowd singing and just, man, it was emotional, yo. It really was.
My favorite part was Jake's like dance.
It was like he was in a mosh pit.
Like doing like the Froog or like the mashed potatoes.
I got a lot of gifts, guys. Dancing ain't one of them.
You're just feeling it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was the best part of just feeling this crowd and like it was real.
And like you're talking about when Chris came out, like it was so cool because you could see it on our faces backstage as they were slowly coming out and slowly revealing to the audience. You could hear the rumbles, and then the rumble got bigger, and then it got bigger, and then it was the big reveal that everyone could see them. And it was just like, we haven't had that feeling in so long. And it's just like, I really like don't want to toot our own horns, but it was like just, man, a great energy all the way around. It was just good for the wrestling world and just great to be a part of.
So going back to when the idea was proposed, because we had thought about doing this kind of, this long angle that would lead to Blood and Guts at the pay-per-view. Then Tony wanted to do it on TV, so Stadium Stampede was like the retort for that. And it, like, once again, we're making jokes, but it really was kind of on our shoulders because we'd been through the first one, and like you mentioned, it was in the middle of this pandemic. No one really knew what to expect. We just wanted to put on, I remember, think we just want to put on a fun diversion for people, which we did. I mean, it was violent at times, but there were so many gags. And then, of course, Jake and Hangman's fight scene was completely serious. Your guys up in the pool was completely not. Mm-hmm. Us on the field was ridiculous, but then it ends with Sammy taking this ridiculous, crazy bump.
Yeah, it was fun for everybody else. That whole match was too fun for me.
You got chased maybe like four times in that match.
Horses and golf carts.
Horses, golf carts.
So then when the idea was Stadium Stampede 2, and I remember there's a lot of people saying, well, what are you guys going to do? Like, how can you make it better than the first? And I was saying, well, I'm sure we thought that after the first Elimination Chamber or after the first Royal Rumble or the first Hell in a Cell. How could you ever top this first ladder match? We just have to figure it out. But I feel that it started with us because we had been in the first. What do we do to make it different in the second? Right? And because of the story that we were telling, we wanted it to be more violent.
Yeah.
You know? And one of the things we wanted to do is make it more like an action movie. And then we were like, well, we should try and hire a stunt coordinator or something along those lines. And then just behold that Jake knows a guy.
Yeah, what a cool idea. And I think a lot of it stemmed from the locker room brawl that we had where you guys came out of the bathroom and into the glass and what you guys did on the patio. It looked so real and so cool. And
that was great.
And you guys had the idea to do the one camera shot on it. And it was cool how it worked out. His name is Joe Dryden. He's husband to Taryn Terrell. And he's worked on a lot of big movies, a lot of big TV shows, and he was the biggest fan. He came in here with a great attitude and not only helped us with like what we wanted to do, but also helped the camera guys make it look a certain way. He always said add energy to the shot. But it was so cool. He climbed up to the top of the scoreboard with us and then climbed back down.
Did you look at his IMDb, like his credits? Like the dude literally has worked on everything.
He's a badass.
In every aspect. Like John Wick was the one that you said. Yeah. But yes, it's been John Wick. But it's been like he's the entire, the whole, what is NCIS New Orleans, which I think is on his 10th season. He is the stunt coordinator, stunt leader, stunt control, stunt. But every other movie, because even like Bill and Ted, like all these other ones that you wouldn't even expect for 20 years. And so when I looked him up, when you mentioned his name, I was like, well, this guy knows
obviously what he's doing, but how is he going to be able to incorporate that with what we're doing? Did he help you guys at all, Sammy? Because your fight scene was looked like a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah, just like with the chair thing in the beginning, because you were saying like almost like there's like a ninja kind of fight. And then we're like, well, we're in a chair room. Like maybe there's some stuff we can do there. And so he kind of helped us with that, going back and forth like a movie. And then, you know, we had the wall flip. Spears is like, you know, is there something you could do with the wall? And then the guy's like, are you athletic, like can you? I was like, I could definitely do some backflips.
Can we talk about the wall flip? That was like straight out of Mortal Kombat, bro.
That was awesome. That was amazing. He definitely helped us a lot too with our scene. He was
how did he help for you guys?
We were just trying to, you know, because I think the vision that we had for that was a little mix of Roadhouse with you know, another movie called Belly. You know, we were just, we had so many ideas. We had a Rumble in the Bronx that we were, you know, we were referencing to, but yeah, we just, that was our whole vision and mindset, was that we wanted to make it look like you said, an action movie, and we're just whipping a bunch of guys' asses. And then we get to the point where we have a moment in the middle and then we just fight. Like they were super awesome with, making sure everyone was in place and, you know, what things to do and what moves. And yeah, they were just awesome. It was great to have them there. And
you guys did the homage with Jake and Hangman did last year. Have a drink before you
fight. Yeah, exactly.
That was cool.
To go off of Santana's point, he actually brought up a really good idea of like fighting in layers, so the scene looks more dynamic. So like when we attack somebody, we're like Santana attacks someone, I step in front of him, I attack someone, just so it adds a different like. Energy to the scene, and it kind of keeps it moving. He was like really telling us, like, when you do stuff too much too fast, then it'll kind of get jumbled up. Mm-hmm. There has to be a pacing, just like there is with wrestling, and that was easy to kind of like for us to kind of get with. And they were dope, man. He was really cool.
It reminded me honestly like of I don't know if you guys ever seen The Raid. It's like this a movie for, I think it's movie. Like Thailand or something. Yeah. And there's a fight scene in there where the guy is in a long hallway and there's just people coming out of different apartments and he's just fighting through in layers, you know, going through that hallway and just busting his way through. And it was,
It's interesting because he told me this fight scene that you guys did in, you know, 12 hours would take 3 weeks in the movies. And I was like, well, it's like guerrilla filmmaking, man. Because the thing that I really felt about it is like, we think like wrestlers. We fight the way wrestlers would fight. So when we're doing bar scenes or whatever, it's a wrestling element to it. But for what I liked with him was he put the stunt fighting, the Hollywood into it. Like there was a couple times with Max and I, and they're the two best punches of the night where you film from behind and you throw the movie magic. And we missed by, you know, 3 feet. But from behind, it looks like I clocked him because you're, like, wrestling punches stop. These ones go right through. And it's like a Schwarzenegger thing. And I was like, why don't we do this all the time? But, of course, you would have to be completely locked in with the camera. And then he came up with the idea where I hit Max and then ran the chair, where he sat in the chair and then took him and would run him into something. And then the other one that was really cool was his other buddy, who was Corey. We're calling it choreography. We go into the office and he goes, I just did this video, and it's a fight scene where the camera is on one side of a window and the guys are fighting on the other side of the window. So we did a fight exactly like that. And I was like, do you just happen to have this on you? Because they didn't really know. They weren't really scouting out the place, because he was supposed to come when we did our rehearsal a couple weeks ago and couldn't make it. So I was like, how do you just happen to have this stuff? But that's what they brought to the table, which I thought was just great. And the one I thought for you, Jake, was when Wardlow picked up those kind of water cans and used it like as boxing gloves. Is that something that he thought of? How did you think of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We were trying to like make it as natural in the elements as we could and just use what we had, because there was so much in there. And he kind of gave us like, hey, maybe these are a good thing to play with. You know, just watch out for like the metal end on them. And then the jab, that looks so good. It looks like he took my head off with it. Originally, we were going to shoot that from behind and show the head jerk. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up shooting it the other way, and it still worked out. And then he said at the end of that was one of the shots that he didn't know it could have worked out from that way, and it ended up, you know, going. Yeah. So
my favorite was the freezer scene and Wardlow grabbing the huge icicle and trying to stab you with the. That was awesome, man. Like, you guys definitely like that element and using the freezer, and that was awesome.
8-year-old Jake channeled his Schwarzenegger. And hell yeah, there. You're full of steam, Wardlow.
But that's the thing too. Like, I know a lot of people were burying us last year for, not a lot of people. The we know who they are. The f***ing assholes were like, oh, it's too comedy, and this is so funny. And we're like, and they're like, oh, they're just, how can they do it with this year? And people never know exactly what we're thinking. And we're always a step ahead because we know what we're doing. And we knew that this was going to be more intense, but there still also has to be some laughs in it. Like, you know, for us, it was the Urban Meyer, or even like I grabbed the megaphone and yelled in his face, which, by the way, really would, like, it's loud, but it's funny, but it's loud. But I think every great action movie has stuff like that in it. All of our favorite movies, like you mentioned, Schwarzenegger, or any Jackie Chan or any John Wick, there is moments of smiling, as there should be. So I was like, we can't just go completely away. Maybe we won't have Ortiz, you know, get stuck in a bell, which is still my all-time favorite moment in AW history, where he's just doing the shake because of it. But let's go back to, once again, okay, so how do we create this? So we came here a couple of weeks before, to the day after Blood and Guts, to the stadium, just to have a conversation about what we wanted to do. And I'm sure all you guys kind of remember more than each, but I was thinking, okay, we know that there's, because Tony said he wants to put Urban Meyer, and originally it was like Tebow or Trevor Lawrence, in the office. And I said, well, maybe we can fight in the office. That'll be our world. Because last year, everyone broke away into their own little worlds. So how did you guys come up with your worlds?
For me, there was already a chair room for the stadium. They had.
Did
like
you
a,
know that?
No, we just were walking around the stadium trying to find an area. And then there was already a chair room. And then Spears was like, obviously, you know, that's his room. And then we were thinking like lighting and all sorts of things, like almost like a video game. Like this is one of the bosses you got to beat. And so kind of when I walk into, when the lights go off, it's almost video game like you just stumbled across the Pokemon and now you need to go into battle kind of thing. So that's kind of what we were thinking.
Just finding that one room.
Yeah.
How for the bar fight?
We just wanted to show a contrast. Like, we had a different, many different ideas going into it. But, you know, with the music, we wanted to kind of set up the world where it's like, okay, they're in the. Originally, we wanted a country song playing in the background. So it's kind of like FTR, this is kind of their scene. Bam, here we come busting through the doors. There's a shift changed with Conan changing the music, and then hip hop is playing. So. That was our idea, where it shows a contrast between us, because very much FTR and us are very much alike in a sense, but we're from different worlds, and we wanted to kind of portray that in the scene. And I think it came across like so. And I just have to sidetrack for a second. Tully in that outfit was amazing. It was one of my favorites. The picture that they have with Tully just...
You guys just walk in there. And shoot
the man, room. It's amazing.
That's one thing I love about Tully is he goes all in. Like, he's not... He gets it. He understands the heel. You go on, you're not worried about what you look like. He shows up in, like, his sparkly... Like, when we were shooting that bubbly at him, he was nowhere to be seen. He wasn't getting his sparkly jacket wet.
I aimed for him, though. I saw him trying to get away. I was like, I'm going to get you.
But the dichotomy of that was so great. And the original idea was, I think you mentioned we should try and get DMX. Or maybe Max mentioned we should try and get DMX. So to kind of talk about the music for a bit, I was like, first of all, we tried to get Van Halen running with the devil when Max and I teamed that one time. They came back and said, for a one-time use, it's $500,000, which is basically a nice way of saying, go fuck your ass, you know?
Pretty much.
And I was like, if I was the richest man in the world, if I was Tony, I would have said, here's a million, give it to us twice. But they were like, and so Frank Sinatra was a lot cheaper, but it was really hard to get, because Sinatra, once again, this is a, you know, me and my shadow, this is a big time guy. He didn't write the song, but it's the publishers who own it. Okay. So then, even like for Judas, like when I want to use Judas, I can't just use it. Sony, who owns our publishing, has to approve. So DMX was the idea, and I thought, well, there's no way. So I asked Mega, who's as Conan will call her, legal girl, which she's now changed her the AW Legal Girl, which she's changed her Instagram too, if you guys saw.
That's awesome. Great.
She kind of does this. That's kind of one of her fortes for the NFL, to get licensing for songs. So I said, well, it's probably a long shot. Thinking about the Van Halen one, because Eddie had just died. They'll probably never use it. And they came back and said, yes, for X, going to give it to you. Mm-hmm. And it was for not a huge, not Van Halen money, and not Frank Sinatra money, which was 15 grand, but somewhere like lower than that, where it was affordable. We can do it. And I even said, like, I'll go halves. Like, let's just get this. Yeah. And this is funny, because this is like, and you were having some rough times, Santana was, and I was like, dude, I got a surprise for you. And he goes, what's the surprise? And like I said, we got DMX, and like, I thought this is going to be it. Like, you know, and we were all excited, and I think you were probably, and you were, I think later you said, what's the surprise? I just told you what the surprise was.
Sounds
is that enough?
Right. Yeah.
So
I could only imagine. He's like, what a prick.
I just
gave him like one of the greatest things ever. Yeah. He's still asking what the surprise is.
What a jerk. So then a couple days before, poor Daryl, because you guys, so Daryl's one of our production managers who he's on the field with us during the stampede. Now you got the guys in the truck and you got us, and he's the middleman. I remember last year, because he was wearing that stupid mask, I was ready to rip his mask off like at 5 a.m. I'm like, what are you saying? Tell them this, tell them that. What? Make a facial expression, because he's super stoic. He's great at his job.
Yeah.
I'm super emotional. It's like, God. So he tells me, so I heard that we don't have DMX. I'm like, what are you talking about? So then this domino effect goes to where we were originally given permission, but the family has to sign off on it, and they didn't sign off. So then I have to break the news, like, oh man, we don't get DMX. So then we're trying to get, what were some of the suggestions?
I was trying to reach out to some of my friends that are part of like Griselda Records, which is like this popular hip hop group now with West Side Gunn and Benny the Butcher and Conway the Machine. Then I reached out to my other friend Smoke Dizza. So I was just trying to reach out to all the guys that I knew that are popular and that, you know, have a really big following and stuff like that.
And they enjoy wrestling.
And they're huge wrestling fans. Right, yeah. So they would have definitely like let it happen. It's funny because I messaged West Side Gunn the day before when we were trying to figure things out. And he didn't see the message until, what was it? I think Monday. And then Monday he responds. He's like, I'm so pissed that I missed this message. Because he was like, bro, the next time you ever want to use anything, you have my sign off, like any time. So, but I was like, you know, next time we'll definitely make something happen.
I'm just looking through trying to find some of these names here. So we're looking to try and find anybody with a certain vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And once DMX was out, I was like, what are we going to do? You know what I mean? And so, because she's like, we were offered Curtis Blow the Breaks. And she goes,
Jesus. That is the most feel-good hip-hop song.
I didn't even tell you, dude, because she goes, it's similar, iconic. First rap song to ever be certified gold and number 10 on VH1's list of the 100 greatest hip-hop songs of all time. Right? So I said, can they get it to us for sure? Then I listened to it and I go, this thing is way too happy. It sucks. It needs to be dirtier in vibe. And then she came up with a couple others, and God bless her, she was working hard trying to get something, and we just couldn't get anybody, and I was, like, my hip-hop knowledge is limited, so I was asking you guys, I had Eddie Kingston come in, I know he's from the streets, can you give us, and he's, a lot of his ideas were the same as yours, and we just couldn't find anything. So then I asked Mikey Ruckus, who is a guy that's come through for us a couple times, can you make something, like, can you make X Go and Give It To You, but just not where we're going to get sued? And
like a remix almost,
He came back with one. It was, and Mega just said, you got to change the horns or whatever. Like, and he came up with one that was pretty
close. It was close. When you sent it to me, I was like, did they use the same beat? Like, because it sounded exactly the same.
And he got some guys from Atlanta, some rappers from Atlanta that came in. And listen, this Mikey Ruckus, he's an unsung hero, because I was like, dude, you got how much time? I said, you got 24 hours. Find some rappers and do it. So he really did, and it came through in the clutch for that for us. So I'm just trying to find the rapper's name. Omega Sparks and Doe the Paperboy from Atlanta laid down a great rap for us. And then the last thing I'll say about it is we originally tried the country music, but I was like, okay, this doesn't fit at all, because this is lit like a club. It feels like a club. Everyone's dressed like a club. and Conan's the DJ.
And he would never.
He would never.
I don't know about never.
No,
I
listen. Pass
him. I would put it past him.
Ortiz and I, we had this argument over text. Like, we were all talking with FTR and stuff. And I was straight up. I was like, first of all, Conan would never play no country.
I don't know about, man.
And then
that's
he
the
goes, band. I don't know about. I was like, bro. He'll tell you himself. I mean,
yeah. Conan might just surprise you, man. I'm telling you.
No, with don't some sleep with some freestyle. Or
I'm talking about with some country.
He would play like '80s Lover Boy or something. Yeah. Like that. And the funny thing too is because we had just gone through all this stuff on the DMX and the library music they had, this country music, it was really bad. And then I'm like, well, FTR wouldn't hang out in a place like this. And I said, just find some really shitty EDM. Mm-hmm. And they used that, and then when the transition came to the hip hop, I thought it really was like, okay, that worked.
Yeah.
The best is like the club is playing EDM, right? And you got FTR and Tully dressed like some village people. And I think that was the greatest thing ever. And then their facial expressions when we walk in and you see like Dax with his hand on his hip.
Yeah.
And he's like leaning again, and I'm like, this just doesn't look right at all.
And then the funny thing about it too was when they got a bunch of extras, and once again, like, I don't, like, I'm not a control freak, but I'm kind of the point man on this. So if there's something going on with our match and you got to tell someone in our, please tell me. They told everybody else but me about they needed extras for the club. So last minute they get the captain to get extras. And I said, can I see a list of those extras? All guys. And I'm like, you understand this is a club, right? Yeah. What kind of a club are these guys hanging in if it's all guys?
EDM Village People Club.
The Blue Oyster.
From
Police Academy, yeah.
So then they hire some chicks who they did the same thing they did last year. They show up for the shoot, goes too late, they leave. So we got the aforementioned Mega, the AEW legal girl, and Jess Palumbo, who's our producer, put on nightclub dresses and hung out there. So at least you had a couple girls in the shot.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Chris Harper.
I was all about fighting in the Blue Oyster, man. I love Police Academy.
We could have probably licensed that music fairly.
Yeah.
Jake, how about the your guys' scene, the Freezer and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, yeah, when we came in for rehearsal, I had the highest hopes of being in the DMX scene. I was going to just kind of work my way.
I think everyone was trying.
Yeah.
To
pull the Mortal Kombat, just head afterwards. But it worked out way better that was your guys' world. And Chris, you had the idea because you seen that you scouted that they had a big freezer full of stadium food, hot dogs, hamburgers.
But you know what's funny though? Just in draw, I didn't scout it. I just said, I thought about Rocky when he was in the, he worked at the butch at the factory on the docks, the meat factory, and he was working out with the carcasses. And I thought it'd be kind of cool, like a scary movie where there's hanging bodies, but they're carcasses. And you guys were, so I said, is there a freezer in here or something? And that's kind of where that started.
Yeah. I thought it was a great idea. I immediately thought that'd be awesome if we could do like a Bruce Lee, like mirror scene where's the guy type deal. And I think it really worked out well. Once we got in there, the way the world kind of came to life is like the room was like a big L, and we wanted like a certain flow. And again, choreograph and Joe Vert, I always call him Joe Dirt. You know, they were telling us we're big guys, have a higher cadence with it. And it was cool that I was able to like incorporate a lot of the MMA training that I had with this and really make Wardlow look a lot tougher than he is. but no disrespect to him, he's a great athlete, and it was just cool. I felt like we had the most toys to play with. We had the freezer, we had like peanuts to bump on, we had icicles hanging, we had the pigs. Going through that wall just sucked though. It was just like did not crumble. It looked like it was like slow to me. It was like the slowest explosion.
Like a real wall would be.
Yeah. I was like, okay. But I was very happy with everything. And man, it was just cool to kind of get the Backsteen side of it and see how they really would do that for a movie. I'm a big movie guy and love action movies. And so how they would show how they would shoot into the wall scene and specifically learned a lot. And talking about Joe Bird, it's cool. Like, it's so different, but the stunt world and what he does is very similar to ours. We just have our differences, and it was cool to kind of get to pick
like,
his brain.
I know the fight scene that we had. He was like, "Could you slip?" And if you kickbox or and you know MMA training, slipping is you're dodging. And Max didn't know that term, and so it was like, and swing and duck for us to be like, you know, I don't even know how you would say it because we don't really do. It'd be block the punch.
Duck two.
It's duck two. Just a little slip and those little details helped to make it different and make it seem much more kind of exciting. Sammy, talk about the second part of your scene because I know there's some stuff that you wanted to do after the chair room when you kind of went.
Oh, right. So like there was that, I don't even know what you call it, that big shelf thing with all the stuff on it. And then we had those two tables and you know me, I'm always trying to do some crazy stuff. And so first there was an even taller shelf right to the right of it. And I climbed up there and see, that was probably like 20 feet in the air. I'm like, yeah, maybe I just go, you know, jump off this, miss something, whatever. And that's the end of my scene. I'm dead after that. Everyone's like, you're legit going to die, though. Like there's concrete underneath. I'm like, I'll be fine.
Yeah, right.
I understand how to do it. But then they're like, no, you can't do that. So then I was like, okay, maybe I'll do the lower one. So, and then it changed to, oh, no, we don't want you, you know, jumping off. And I'm like, all right, maybe I get thrown off of it, you know? I just was throwing everything at the wall. I'm like, kill me with something. And then it got swept from under me. Spears moved. And but I still got to do some parkour stuff, you know?
That was cool.
Yeah, jump onto the little forklift thing or whatever it is, and then
there was one point where they were like saying he wants to use the forklift, like as if you wanted to like be pulled up on the forklift or something.
Yeah, they all told me no.
Yeah,
big no on that one. Or not? Oh, the forklift. Okay, I thought you meant the.
Or was it? What was it called?
What is that called?
The thing.
Cherry picker.
The cherry picker. Is that what it is? Or the thing that goes up?
Yeah.
The like thing that Kenny Moonsault.
Like Kenny Moonsault. Fight. Yeah.
So yeah, I had about 8 people come up to me that day and say nothing off that, and I was like, but you don't know what I'm gonna do. They're like, just don't even touch it. I'm like, all right.
And then the other thing was when you got the bolt cutters, you see the bolt cutters, you were going to have the handcuff on for the end scene.
Yeah.
I remember halfway through, I was like, he doesn't have his handcuff. What happened to the handcuff? And I'm like, he's handcuffed.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to get more behind the scenes, since we're speaking to the handcuffs, I mean, I got this black eye here.
That's right.
Yeah. Chris, you got to probably see that like firsthand.
I saw it. I was standing
right never got to watch it back.
Yeah.
But I'm pulling these handcuffs that's attached to the bar. And I'm pulling it, and I don't know who is in charge of these handcuffs. We're, you know, $1 million company, got $4 handcuffs. They came off, hit me right in the eye, gave me a black eye.
The handcuff came unattached and swung and hit him in the face.
Dude, that hurt more than the whole scene.
Anything else?
The whole f***ing scene.
I remember looking at Sean like, bro. we're supposed to take care of each other.
He's like, that was all him.
Kicking my own ass.
and then you said the handcuff was too long, the chain was too long.
Yeah, and then
like
I was, you know, doing the 630, like it's going to whip and hit me something. Yeah. So I just left it in the cup holder. I was like, you know what? I cut it off with the bolt cutters. That's what I did.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Let's talk about the big scene that everybody was talking about, which of course was the rappelling off the scoreboard. Which you guys are all blaming it being my idea. Was it really my idea?
That was your idea.
So how do you guys remember being
I think we, what it was that when they told us, all right, we're going to do Stadium Stampede 2 with these guys, with the Pinnacle, I think that's when we had started thinking of like ideas, and we were all throwing out ideas or whatever. So the original idea that we all had was to have a helicopter.
Right.
Right. And fly over the stadium to lower, and we all rappel out of the helicopter.
Right.
On some like SEAL Team 6 shit. And I remember when we had mentioned that to you, you were the first one to go, well, y'all could rappel. That helicopter is going to lower that ass, and I'm going to walk right out of it.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And then we all started giving you shit. We were like, no, come on. You're going to be the first one to rappel out of there. And then I think, you know, it was an idea we all pretty much had and agreed with. And then I don't think the helicopter was available.
Well, it's funny because at one point, too, Charlie, who, by the way, did a great job on everything, he said... well, yeah, we can't do the helicopter because of the insurance. I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, no one can get thrown out of the helicopter because of insurance. I said, well, who wants to get thrown out of the helicopter?
Bing!
Sammy.
Dude, we're doing this movie like match. Imagine 20, 40 feet in the air getting thrown.
You do understand that when you land, you will land on basically the ground.
I'll make it work.
It's spoken from a true guy who's never been injured before. Just wait until you get your first. You'll think differently. But the point is, I was like, well, the idea has never been for Sammy to get thrown out of the helicopter, although Sammy wanted to do that.
I remember we were texting about it, too. You're like, no, I'm not getting thrown out of the helicopter. No, Chris, I'm getting thrown out of the helicopter.
He's also the guy that wanted to get thrown off the top level of the staircase last year.
Yeah.
From the top of the stadium. I go, what are you going to do when you land? He goes, well, I don't know.
Disappear?
Disappear.
I'm dead.
So the helicopter was just hard. And I remember, I think it might have even been Tony that was really anti-helicopter, talking about Kobe Bryant, and he just didn't like helicopters and all that sort of stuff. But I remember that somebody told me, it might have been Charlie, that said that the mascot, Jackson DeVille, who I beat up last year, at the games, rappels from something, and he ziplines. So I said, so you mean rappelling and ziplining is an option? He said, yes. I said, well, that's interesting. Let's put that down on the list of things. So that's kind of where that came from. And then they told me that, because I think we had thought, okay, we'll zipline down onto the field, and then we'll be ready for battle. And they said that zipline you want to do is like double the price of the rappelling. And when I say double the price, it's like 50 or 60 grand more expensive. So it's big money. And I was like, well, I guess we're rappelling. Not realizing exactly what that entails.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So we film most of our stuff during the day, and then we have to wait till it's dark to film the beginning of the match, right? So we show up there, and let's talk about kind of the experiences of that.
So it's funny because you're talking about Sammy crashing downstairs, Sammy jumping out of the helicopter. And we had been talking about Stadium Stampede all of May. We knew we had a big month, and we had a vision. And in my head, it was always Sammy going up to the high spots and coming down. And it wasn't until about 2 hours before we actually had to do it that I got the actual details about what was happening. I went and sat in my trailer, and I just sat there for a second by myself. Someone came in. I was like, need a moment, dog. Just give me a moment. Yeah.
You're not much of a heights guy.
No, I'm not, man. I would say that's probably my kryptonite.
Dude, you never would have known. You never said a word. You can see it in your face in some of those behind-the-scenes
shots.
I'll
put that first climb up the scoreboard. That was scarier to me than going into an MMA fight.
Yeah.
I had more of a rush on that and like just felt like out in the elements, like any moment it could have been it.
Well, let's talk about it first. So we go to the top platform where we kind of landed off of that. That's as high as it goes. So then they put us, they kind of gave us a little bit of a safety briefing type of thing.
Listen, they gave us a safety briefing and a prayer. And I was like, after the prayer, I was like, we got to go. Like, let's.
I specifically remember one of the guys telling me, man, I forgot exactly what he said, but he was talking about an accident happening.
He basically said, there was this one guy that, and you went.
I was just like, tell me when we're back on the floor. I was like, don't tell me this now. Yeah. You're going to mind me and I'm going to be up there the whole time.
I heard
time.
Him say it, and I was like, he's like, there's this one guy that he's like, stop. Stop right now. I was like, yeah, don't tell us. I said, tell us about the 1,000 people that had the best time ever. Don't tell us about the one guy that shit happened to. You know.
To their credit, they were super professional. They ran through everything a million times with us, like two times on the floor, and then another time he kind of gave us the run through, the guy who was coordinating it. But yeah, the one guy that was in charge of me, I think specifically, was just like, yeah, man, there was this one guy one time. And I was like, dude, come on. Not right now. I never got the story from him, though.
Well, we didn't. Yeah, by the time we landed, it was fine. But I remember they check, they put like this, the whole harness on. Mm-hmm. And so if I put it on Santana, then I check to make sure. And then like Jake has to come check, another professional has to check. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was standing there, everyone else was getting checked. And I was like, is anyone else going to check me? Like, do I get us to check? You start getting excited.
Yeah, of course.
What were you thinking then, Sammy? Because you're obviously the daredevil of the group in a lot of ways.
The scariest part was like the climbing up the steep ass ladders.
Let's talk about that. So explain what we're
doing. Yeah, so we have to go through like the back of the scoreboard thing, or the giant TV, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And there's these ladders you have to climb up, and you're not strapped into anything. You're legit just climbing these steep ass
ladders. Stories. They're like stories. Ladders that are a story long, and they're straight down.
And like, I made the mistake of looking down because I'm like, man, I feel like we've been climbing for a while. And I look down, I'm like, oh shit, we're high, you know?
Mind you, we weren't hooked up to anything at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That we weren't strapped in, nothing. Yep.
And they never really told us that, which maybe is by design. They just said, okay, you guys climb up these ladders. And I was thinking, like, this is pretty high because this scoreboard, I mean, is it 100 feet, 150 feet? I don't know. Yeah. So we're basically climbing 150 feet straight up. And it's nighttime, so it's windy. Not super windy, but windy enough. Yeah. I also had that stupid arm brace on, and my arm was taped, so my hand was taped. So it's a little bit slippery, slidey, and that thing kept getting caught at times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if this thing, like, if you fell off this ladder, you literally would die because you would fall stories. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, different platform from each, from what I recall. It was just one big ladder, then there'd be kind of, like, a little area, then another story of ladders, mm-hmm. then a little area. And you were kind of ass flying in the wind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you said, Jake, that was more terrifying than an MMA fight?
It really was. I had to like go to a special place in my head and just tell myself, step, grip, yeah. step, grip. And it was one of those things that I was so glad that I went through with you guys. And afterwards, it was an awesome experience. And like, I mean, how many like feelings do we get right. like that in life? But if y'all would not have been there, my ass would not have gone on those stairs. That was for you guys. Merry
Yo,
Christmas.
Yo, Jake, first of all, Jake, we still got beef because supposedly the stunt coordinators, they were like, the two biggest, heaviest guys have to be on each end.
Yeah,
right?
We had to be on the ends.
Right? So we're getting up there and we're climbing. We finally make it up those terrible-ass ladders. And we're inside the scoreboard.
We're right behind it. Did you see those giant spider webs all over the place?
Yeah, it was insane.
Now I got to deal with spiders.
Yeah,
like right out of a Hollywood haunted house, right, spider webs.
We survived the climb right to these. And I swear, the moment we came up, there was this giant spider going, "What's up?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Come on, man!"
So we're inside the scoreboard, and you know the coordinator, he's like, "Hey, all right. So obviously the two biggest guys have to go first or whatever." And you know, he was making sure
you guys
we were in
climb
order
up on the roof first.
Yeah,
yeah,
and. So he goes, so who's going to go first? And I just see Jake do the Homer Simpson into the
bushes.
Yep, he's into the bushes. He disappeared. And then I'm looking around, and Jake is a big dude. That was the first time I didn't see Jake. He just, like, disappeared. So I tell the guy, I was like, well, me, I guess I got to go up there first. And I remember getting up there, and he strapped me in.
You're a real friend. Thank you.
Yo, that's real love. But, you know, we get up there. He puts me in position. He straps me in. And then he goes and walks away. And I look at him, and I was like, yo, where you going? And he's like, I got to go get the other guys. And I'm like, so I have to stand up here by myself? Like, that's what you're telling me? He's like, no, I'll be quick. Quick my ass, all right? I was up there. And I saw 30 years of my life like flash through my eyes, and I'm just holding on tight, and the wind is going, and I'm just like, this can't be my life.
And you're
like,
all by yourself?
Yeah, and I'm by myself. I can't even like talk to no one. It was, Jake, I love you.
To further his point, I went up second, and I was like, I'll go up there with my partner. I'm not going to leave him out there hanging. His face was hilarious. He was like shitting his pants, and he looked at me, and he looked like he saw a ghost. He was,
yeah,
pale. And he was just like, I saw my whole life flash before my eyes, and I just started dying. And he was really like, well, whatever.
The thing is too, when we're walking on the top of it, they have you safety lined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in between every pole, they have to take the safety line off and put it back on. That's how mm-hmm. we're kind of inching our way down. And I remember every time that safety line came off, I was like, put it back on. And yeah. then when you get to the position you got to be, the safety line comes off. And they're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know? And so because you were second, mm-hmm. then I was third. And then you were fourth. And then Jake was last, right? Yeah.
By design.
So then they said, the three guys in the middle, which is Sammy, Ortiz, and I, you'll go first. And then Jake and Santana will go second. And I remember him saying, like, now that you're hooked up here, like, now that you're on the line, if you fell asleep right now, you would still go. Like, you have no control anymore now, yeah. right? So then we're sitting there for 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
as they're getting the shot ready. That's when I started to get in my head and started to lose it. Mm-hmm. How was it for you guys sitting there like that?
That was terrible.
Yeah.
That was, you know, because like you said, your head starts going to like some real dark places,
yeah.
you know, and you start being reminded of other situations right. that have happened. And as much as you try not to think of those things, it's almost next to impossible because you're, you know, this is such a, even though, you know, we're all professionals and the guys that were taking care of us were all professionals, anything can happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Anything. Right. And, but
I remember looking down and it was so high up that I saw these little black marks on the ground mm-hmm. that later on I realized were the refs. They were so small. They looked like little tiny, yeah. like smaller than grains of rice.
Uh-huh.
Like just little kind of little like eyelashes mm-hmm. almost. Smaller, yeah. you know? How about you, Sammy?
So, yeah, when we first got up there and we were strapped and just sitting with our legs dangled over it, just waiting, first I was like, oh, shit, this is kind of scary. But then like after a little bit, I'm like, I'm not backing out. I know y'all not backing out. So I'm like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I might as well just try to enjoy it because, you know, I'm probably never going to do it again. Mm-hmm. So then I started kind of f***ing around, like kind of dancing a little bit next to Jake, you know. It was cool, man. I definitely don't want to do it again, but it was definitely an experience.
The best part is that then you start getting your vlog.
Yeah.
Joe, like you mentioned, Joe, our stunt guy, he climbed up with us just to be there and then climbed down again. Yep. I can't imagine climbing down those stairs.
Okay, I would do it again because I would not want to do those stairs.
If you could jetpack me up to the top, yeah. I would do it again, but I'm not doing those.
I'm not climbing
ladders
those,
again.
Those ladders.
So anyway, so you're doing your vlog thing, and I remember I made a joke when you're in the inner circle, you're always on top. What a stupid catchphrase yeah. that was. We're all laughing, except for Jake, who's looking straight forward. So then I watched it again, and Jake has a little bit of a grin, and that's it. We're all like, ah, ha, ha, ha. Jake's just like,
not f***ing around, crew. As soon as we get down on the ground, I had so many production guys come up to me and they're like, man, we got your face when you were at the top. And I was like, yeah, did I look tough? And they were like,
Then it looked like he was an undefeated MMA guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I go, so you guys had zoomed in cameras on us? I should have found out that beforehand.
So then they go, it's a 3-2-1 go. And this is go time. And so you guys went, Santana and Sammy, sorry, Ortiz and Sammy went first. And I sat there for a second, a little longer, only because like a little bit intimidated, but like you're trying to make sure you're in the right position. And there was kind of a wire underneath our seats that you
same thing happened to me. It got caught up on the harness.
It, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. When you guys went, I saw the rope that was right in front of me gets pulled out. And I'm like, oh, that pulls them out. Oh, it's pulling me out too. And then here we go. So I came off. I swung straight out. And I came straight back and hit the scoreboard. And I you can still see the little cut. I didn't cut my, which Ortiz will say, Ortiz hurt his finger. But I came and smacked against the scoreboard, which it's solid and it's serrated. Like you can feel the edges, like almost like a ruffle chip.
Yeah.
And I hit that thing hard. And it was like, donk. It's like, shit. But the thing for me was, there was no, like, if you bungee or something, you feel that you go down and up. There was none of that. Like, once we went out, there was a swing, but you could feel we were super strapped in. Mm-hmm. I never felt, like, wobbly. Mm-hmm. And then I felt a little bit better about it, you know? How was it for you guys getting pulled out?
For the whole time, to go back to your question earlier with the mindset, it was helping that we were talking. And Santana were like off to the side and we were talking. So it helped me get distracted. And I was just focusing on the instructions. I never looked down. I was like, if I look down, I'm going to freak myself out. Yeah. So I never looked down. And then when he said 3-2-1 go, I was like, I'm just going to go as soon as he says go, whatever. I'm going to trust in the equipment, trust in everybody and go. So when I went, I pushed off and went flying off. And then as I'm falling down, I remember saying, you can grab the rope that the harness is attached to in front of you. So I'm right-handed and just automatically I went to go grab the rope. But then as soon as like you hit tension, mm-hmm. it kind of pulled up a little bit and my finger slipped down and it hit the metal part of the
clip or whatever.
The clip, yeah. and my fingernail hit my cubicle and my fingernail almost
came
off.
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah, I see it now.
So then it just started bleeding, and then all the fear I had went away because I'm like, my finger. And I'm like, you can see certain shots that I'm in the air getting belayed down. I'm supposed to look like a badass, but I'm just like this with my finger. And luckily, man, my finger didn't get caught with all that pressure coming down.
Yeah, that could have been dangerous.
Man, I would have kept going with a finger, like with my finger choice. Just on the floor, like what I would have did. But I almost lost a finger. But Jake, being the only smart one, he stopped by a gas station earlier in the day and got gloves. And everyone I talked to, and they were like, you're rappelling and you didn't have gloves? And no, I was like, I know. No one told us. Yeah,
I think we do this shit every week.
Any other entertainment, movie, TV, whatever, they'd have stuntmen going down, and then we'd get about 6 feet off the ground. Yeah. We'd say cut, and then we'd get the glory shot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not what happened. That was us from the beginning till the end.
Yeah.
So when we go over the edge, what are you guys thinking, and how much longer was that until Santana and Hager go?
So right before it happened, like for me, like the sitting down and putting your legs over the edge and just kind of having to dangle there, and then they have to pull the slack out of the line, and it kind of like pulls your hips out, so you really got to have a good grip.
And before you say, let me just say, what he's saying is we're literally sitting on the edge of that thing, like a little kid dangling his feet over the dock to splash the water. That's how we're sitting for 20 minutes, so continue.
And over the top of where we're sitting, there was like a steel cable. Right. And I noticed like my thing got caught on it right away. And I was trying to like hit my butt over it, but not go too far. And I know you guys had problems with it. And I felt like I was on an island screaming, hey, there's that cable. But, you know, how it goes in the moment. But after we got up there and we got over, and like I saw you three go first, you know, it's just time to go. You're not going to leave your brothers behind. And like he said, you felt very secured and going down. At the very end, the pyro starts going off, and they had me the last one. I was right over the pyro, and I was literally like Yosemite Sam running, trying to get over away from the fire. And then the pyro guy came up to me. He was like, how was it? I was like, do I owe you money?
Did it make it easier when you saw us go over Santa?
It did a little bit, but I just, again, I think we all had trouble with that cable. Because I had gotten caught too. But when it was time for us to go and you know, push off the ledge, all I kept thinking, and I think I might have yelled it while we were going, I just kept thinking of that scene in The Lost Boys where they're hanging from the bridge and they just let go and they fall into the clouds. And I remember just keeping that in my head. I was like, yo, I'm going to fall into a bed of clouds and we're gonna be okay. We're going to be all right.
You even said that on, because in the edit, I watched it before they put like the sound effects and the Judas over top. You're like, we're the Lost Boys, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And all you can see when we go over the edge, you hear like this is great. It's like a million F-bombs dropped
so
in the middle.
So many.
And I remember too, the guy also said, if you start spinning around, spin your leg around in a circle, and that'll keep you forward. Kind of like if you're swimming, you try and want to stay. So I did that a couple times, and then I did it one time, and I had total control, and I put my finger out like, I'm coming after you, Max. And they got it on camera, and it's like, that's the one time I look cool the whole time, and they caught it on camera. So it's like, all right, perfect.
It's the one time you had control.
Exactly, one control. And like now, once we got like probably a quarter of the way down, I realized like, we are totally fine.
Yep.
Now let's start having some fun with it, you know?
Watching the back, I didn't see us up there. I saw Steven Seagal, Schwarzenegger, Chuck Norris.
The Expendables up there. Dude. Yeah, like, or the Avengers. Like, that was a superhero moment. Yeah. Like, I remember afterwards, we're like, who gets to do this shit? Like, it was scary at first, but nobody has ever done that before in wrestling. And I'll say nobody's ever done it again. And if they do, it's only because they're copying us. Mm-hmm. That's pretty badass.
It's one of the cool things about the Stampede is, like, the first year, you didn't really know what it was. So there's no pressure on, like, what we could do, because we knew we could just make something.
Right.
And then this year, there's more pressure. You want to, like, have it on the same level or better and have it in a different light. And so just having that opportunity to be able to create and like do stuff like this in order to make it better, really cool to be a part of.
I'm just thankful and just, it's awesome that a lot, if not all of the things that we have done so far in the last 18 months, is going to live forever, you know, with this company, and as the company continues to grow and expand. And like, these are moments that are solidified in the company's history, you know, and the fact that we all got to do it together and experience all those things together is just, it's awesome, man.
Yeah, when we did that montage last week, which was a minute, and you said, like, we've done some pretty cool shit, and that was just a short little slice of it. You could make a whole 90-minute documentary on the Inner Circle. A few more things that I wanted to point out. When we got to the bottom and landed, our pyro goes off. But when we got to the bottom, Ortiz, the weight was off, and he fell on his back.
Yeah.
Like, as he landed, like as he hit the ground, so he didn't fall from any distance.
Yeah.
So he lands on the ground, and the pyro's going off. And I'm like looking at him. He's like, I'm like, get up, get your ass up. If we don't get this pyro shot, I ain't doing it again. Get up, get up.
I was literally like a turtle on the back of the shell. I was just so embarrassed because we're looking like badasses, but the harness, since it's so clipped so high, my weight was kind of like above my hips.
Right.
So my feet touched the ground, but then all of a sudden it's just like all the slack went.
Yeah.
And I just straight back bumped on the ground. So I was just laughing. And Chris was like, get up, get up. And I'm like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah, Chris was making damn sure he wasn't climbing up that shit again. Yeah.
This is one time we got it. Something we've done great every time, we've done it a bunch of times, is the matching outfits, but cool versions of them. We had... For the weigh-in, we had kind of the MMA tracksuits that we got made. Stan and Stampy one, we had the football uniforms, which was awesome. Blood and Guts, we had the prison outfits. And then we came up with the idea, actually, I think Jake first had the vest, because we had spoken about doing maybe the Warriors gimmick from the movie, where they're all wearing the vest, and Jake got one made. Just talk about, that's Ortiz's boy and Santana's boy. Yep. Great job. And those things looked great on camera. They really did. Like, that to me was like maybe our best costume ever. Yeah. You could fight in it, and just talk a little bit about that idea. What'd you think, Sammy, about that?
Yo, I thought they were badass. Like, I just was going to wear it one time and then like frame it like I did with the football. But like, man, these are so cool. I want to just wear it out every week now, you know, whenever I wrestle.
And that's the thing, because it says our names and nicknames and stuff on it, we could wear it no matter what.
Yeah.
You could wear it forever, you know?
I think I'm going to. Yeah. Like, I was going to do a one-time thing, but they're just too badass.
Shout-out to his IG. You can follow him. He's an artist. He does paintings. He does graffiti. He does a little bit of everything, and also he raps as well, right? Yeah, he's kind of a jack-of-all-trades, and he's just super talented. His IG is tony.caves. Cavs.
Yeah. He's also Hawk Motorsports, which is HWK Motorsports.
No, that's the brand of the leather vest.
Oh,
yeah.
I
that's
tagged
separate.
That on.
Yeah.
It's a cool vest by Hawk Motorsports. Yeah. I'll have to switch that. Give me his name later.
But that's the brand of the vest that we had. But
Well, thanks to them, too. He's thinking that stupid idiot.
But, he hooked it up. We've known him for a while. He's a part of Bodega Bam's his crew, the artist that did our first theme song. And yeah, man, he's always been a big supporter. He's a huge wrestling fan. And since day one, since we got with him, he's just we've always really, really loved his work. Like, he helped design our first shirt and stuff like that, and a couple of other things. But
the cool thing about it is, when Jake got it made, you had kind of the Santana Ortiz Statue of Liberty, but with the American bandana. I never would have thought of that. I would have put like an Inner Circle logo on the back, but it just looked cooler.
Because
if you look closely, people watching, Santana Ortiz says their Statue of Liberty has a Puerto Rican headband. Sammy's and Jake's has an American flag headband, and mine has a Canadian flag headband.
Yeah.
That's just another little detail. Like, these
by the way, my grandma, that was my grandmother's favorite like part of the whole match.
Just a little detail?
Just that detail that we each had our different, you know, flags and stuff on the statue.
I dropped the ball with Sammy. Yeah. He was supposed to,
Someone tweeted, they're like, how come you don't have the Cuban flag? I tried.
I dropped the ball. I was supposed to relay the message, and I forgot to relay the message. Oh, so
the things are still dope regardless.
Yeah.
Besides his last name and his background, he's about as Cuban as I am.
Well, I think Jericho should have had the Cuban flag.
Last thing, Sammy, as we wind down here, the finish of the match, we had discussed doing something high risk, because I feel that you did it during the fight on the field, which, by the way, this year, did you guys notice we were hardly on the field at all?
For like a minute?
And I thought at first we might get kind of, you know, roasted for that a bit, but it didn't matter. But I was just thinking, we didn't do anything on the field. We started there and we went off into our own little world. Mm-hmm. But you had a shooter on the field that Sean moved. Mm-hmm. You were going to do it in the equipment room off the rack, and he moved. And I just people are going to want to see this. And so we had discussed a couple of things. You said, I'm just going to do what I feel. It's either it's going to be a couple of tell the ideas.
Yeah, it was either going to be a Shooting Star, maybe a Spiral Tap, or the 630.
What's the Spiral Tap?
Spiral Tap is like a front flip, but you do like a 360 spin.
Gotcha. You also discussed maybe some kind of a frog splash.
Yeah, frog splash, swanton thing.
Right.
The 630 is probably the coolest thing
I can do.
That's
what I was hoping for.
Yeah. But when I'm up there, depending on where the guy's positioned, you know, it can either go really well or really not. And it's the end of the match, so we need it to go really well. Because can you imagine if I did the 630 and just missed? Can you imagine?
Pinnacle wins, inner circle's done.
That's what would happen.
I probably would just lay there like, you know what? Just pin me. Sean. I want to die. but yeah, no, I got up there, man, and with the crowd, it just was such a amazing feeling. I just was in the moment, and I was like, I'm doing the 630, man. I'm going to nail this. And I nailed it. I crushed him.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't have hit it any no. better or any more vicious looking.
Yeah. I guess he owes me money or something, you know? But no, yeah, 6 days, that was a brilliant idea, especially. It's almost like we planned that from the beginning with the teasing from the very beginning mm-hmm. to trying to jump off and then finally nailing it.
So I guess huge success. Like I said, second biggest buy rate we've done. And we've now opened the door for a Stadium Stampede 3. And just final thoughts on the match for me. Like, I think we did such a great job in providing a different style of match with still all the twists and turns that you expect. We raised the bar in a lot of ways with the rappelling. We got so much mainstream press from the Urban Meyer scene that was all over, you know, ESPN and, you know, Sports Desk and Canada, everything. And I think once again, we proved everybody who thought they knew what we were going to do wrong. Oh, it's just going to be another comedy. It was not that. It was a hard-hitting action movie that we wanted. And once again, to do it with you guys, it was awesome because definitely one of the highlights of my career is being in the Inner Circle. But doing this, I remember when we finished that rappelling, just all of us looking at each other going like, this is the coolest way to make a living ever.
Yeah.
You know, it was just unbelievable. So
no better job in the world, man.
Yeah, so I just think it was a huge success. And once again, another great moment to experience with you guys. Final thoughts?
Yeah, I think it was really cool to be a part of. And just goes to show you like what Stadium Stampede could be, like where could it go if we do it again. It's really exciting. And I remember we were texting about it after it went down, and I think you texted the group like saying those hugs in the ring were real, you know. And it took me a moment, because like you're in the moment, you're just like kind of just going one hug to the next, and then like sitting there, it's like, man, those were real. And like, how many times do people that you work with, you really love each other like we do? And it's just, man,
yeah,
great place to work.
Yeah,
like I said, I think this is going to be something that we all remember for the rest of our lives, you know. Like I know damn well I'm not going to forget rappelling off a f-ing scoreboard in an NFL stadium, and being able to do it with all you guys. And of course, you know, like Ortiz and I have said this before, like Jericho and reading your first book was the reason why, you know, how we became a tag team and all that stuff. So to see our careers come full circle the way it has, and just having just the opportunity to experience all these things, man, has been truly special. And like, if it all ended tomorrow, like I can honestly say, yo, like we did something special, you know, and I'm proud of what we've done.
To go off the point, I think the hug at the end, and it was that crowd, man. They made that moment so special for us, and them singing Judas, it was just, that was the moment. It was just very full circle. Double or Nothing started the pandemic, and then we finished the pandemic in a really feel good way. And you know, Sammy's redemption story, I think it played perfectly through the beginning of this story and this whole arc, and obviously we still got a story to tell. But yeah, I'm excited for, you know, 20 years from now, whoever is in our spot, what they'll do with Stadium Stampede 10 or something like that. Yeah. Like, because you only know with time things get crazier and better. You know what I mean? You will always have the nostalgicness of the beginning and where it came from. But imagine what people are going to be doing. Like, you know, imagine a Leo Rush in a Stadium Stampede. He's already an action star in the ring. It'll be ridiculous. And I can't wait, man. And to look back when we get older and be like, man, we influenced that. And it'll be so cool to see where it goes.
Our stadium stampede will look like the first Brett and the Sean and Razor or ladder match. This is insane. They took three bumps.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it home, Sammy.
Yeah, no. I mean, what Santana just said, too, I was thinking that when we're all hugging there, I'm like, man, if it just ended right here, my girlfriend's here. You guys are my best friends. Like, if I just, because earlier that day, a fan came to my room, you know, and tried to get in my room at the hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had to change. That's what, like, I was late. Shit. Yeah, I legit had to change rooms. And, like, I was thinking, because, like, he wanted me to sign stuff, and I was like, if that guy literally kills me later, like, this is one of the best nights ever, you know? Like, well, but luckily that didn't happen.
If he did, we would kill him right after.
That's right. So that's right. But no, it was a night I'll definitely never forget, man. Especially it was just cool to be able to see y'all's all scenes, because I didn't watch anything
That's
back.
Right.
I wanted to watch it with the crowd's reaction and everything, and just like how we all come together and then also get creative separately to create this one thing, Stadium Stampede. I think that's what makes it so special, is it's just 10 guys, us five, all coming together to make the best product. And Stadium Stampede, I think forever it'll be cemented with Inner Circle's match, you know?
That's it, man.
Yeah.
Well, guys, a pleasure as always. I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come. And like I said, I'll never forget us sitting on top of that stupid doorway.